Okay, so we're going to be talking about our homework from last night. If you were not with us last night, no worries. I will review a little bit of what we talked about, the nature of addiction and these drug hits that shrink our brain and things like that. We talked about the stages of pornography enslavement and sensitization of the drug, desensitization of everything else. Your brain shrinks the good voices and the whole roller coaster sinks. And if you're trying to remember that with some kind of mnemonic device, the idea is sensitization, desensitization, shrinks and sinks. So what I wanted you guys to think about was how would God's wisdom, how would God's word address helping somebody with each of those different steps? So they're in the throes of the sensitization or the throes of the desensitization or the roller coaster has sunk. How would you help that person who's enslaved in those ways? What I'm going to do is cover that again. And then, like I mentioned last night, the goal is for this to be more of a class environment, apart from the sermon tomorrow for the rest of the sessions, to be able to, I guess I didn't ask for comments last time. You just let me blab on and on. So let's talk about these four stages again briefly. There's some here who were not here last night. Sensitization means that you hone in, focus in on that thing. Hypersensitized to it, I want to go back to that. Your brain is saying you should go back to that. Images get seared onto the brain and we start craving, right? Mentally, I want that thing again. Our mind keeps going back to it. I'm drawn maybe even into automatic behaviors. You're not thinking and I start making actions toward that thing again. And anything associated with it then becomes sticky. It's like it clings to that. So your mental state, next time you're bored, your brain goes, oh, you're bored. Remember what you did last time you were bored? The place where it happened, the time of day, associated things, friends, you name it. So all those things become sensitized because your brain says, I want that again. Desensitization of everything else, we call that where, like if you've been at a loud concert for a long time and your hearing goes down, where now your brain's not absorbing those things. Everything is quieted. Because the brain doesn't want to overload, it dials down the dopamine of everything else. It's like you've overfed the brain, and so everything then becomes less pleasurable in your life, and you start caring less about other things that should be giving you a sense of reward, satisfaction, accomplishment, etc. Stage three, we had these pictures. Your brain shrinks those good voices, and as the enslavement increases, you've shrunk the parts of your brain that are normally telling you, no, don't do that, you'll get in trouble, you'll get arrested, you'll lose your job. All those good parts of your brain, you've shrunk them, and those voices are significantly quieter. Now, obviously, we need to listen to those voices still, but we've hurt ourselves in the process. And finally, the whole roller coaster of highs and lows goes down. The pornography doesn't even help us feel good. It does less to make us feel good and serves more and more to keep you just from feeling bad. You think the drug is going to give you a high, but actually, by the end of it, it's just keeping you not feeling anxious and overwhelmed and going to it because you can't handle life anymore. It's like sounding an alarm. Oh, I need to go back to that thing. And your body's amping up these stress hormones because it wants that thing again. They're consuming it just to feel normal. That's the idea. And so we have this graphic of the whole roller coaster of highs and lows going down. Okay, so you tell me, do you guys have any thoughts of some practical biblical advice for someone who is trying to overcome the effects of the sensitization? Any thoughts that you guys had with that? Feel free, yes.
Passage that came to mind was Ephesians 5, where he talks about not being drunk with wine, but filled with the Spirit.
Okay.
And so there are delightful things about the Lord and about worshiping God. And so I need to use the language here and get those dopamine hits from spending time with God and seeing
it. Yeah, good. Okay. So getting satisfaction from good things. And the thing you just mentioned really could apply to several of these steps. Alex was asking last night, he said, what about like the good side of dopamine? Like how can we use that for good in our life. And that's absolutely the case. Good. Other thoughts that you want to share? Yes?
What about the story?
So she saw it, she focused on it, and her mind was set, I gotta have that thing, right? That kind of sounds like we need to set our minds on things above, not on things up here, because that tempts us. Good. Any other thoughts? Yes?
I thought of Romans 6:14, how sin not being a master over you.
Yeah. Yes. And that's what we've done, is kind of made it a master over us. If the brain is now sensitive to associated things with the drug, then you need to stay away from those things, right? Because your brain's like, oh, you're alone again, so I can engage in this again. So maybe I need to stay away from being alone for a while, or something else associated with that. You need to get rid of that phone, or get the internet out of the house, or don't hang out with those friends. Because your brain says, oh, this is where I can get that. Again, you've become sensitized. That's not a neutral thing anymore. Jesus said it this way, Matthew 5:29, if your right eye causes you to sin, get rid of it. Tear it out, throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than to your whole body be thrown into hell. And so I want to keep this thing, but you know what? Right now, all it does is bring me back to that place of temptation. Mix up your routine. I think that's helpful. If you become sensitized, then your room, your family room, the hangout place, It's now a place of temptation for you, so mix that up. Sleep in a different place. Do something enjoyable. Here's a good one. Go to Bible camp for a week, because new place, new location, get your thinking realigned. That can be very, very helpful to us. Be mindful of those moods that drive you to the drug, right? If you're feeling lonely, you're feeling hopeless, you're sad, you're anxious, your brain's making those associations. Now, it's not going to help you, but it says, oh, this will fix my loneliness. Next time I feel lonely, but that's just a trick. So things to be aware of then with this, increasing awareness, talked about this last night, is just awareness of knowing that you're going to have cravings, right? Knowing that it's going to be strong, wanting to pull you back. Be on the lookout for your brain associating things from those previous drug hits. Like, oh yeah, like that does come to mind, right? And don't be surprised when those images are still vivid. They've been seared onto your brain. And so that's going to be what happens. Okay, let's move on to desensitization. Any thoughts of wisdom and from God's word of helping someone as they undergone desensitization, which means that other things just aren't as enjoyable anymore? David.
Courage to give thanks and everything give thanks.
Okay.
So making a list of the blessings that we do have. Good things are around us.
Good, yeah. And that's really on the lines of one of my thoughts here is your brain's adjusted to the fire hose and it's lowered the pleasure of everything else. So refocus on those good things that should give us satisfaction. Really lean into that. So making a list of things to be thankful for. Refocusing on relationships and good, positive things. And even though it may not be as satisfying, be like, look, that's where I'm at right now. I need to still hang out with good people, I need to make sure I'm going to church, I need to read my Bible, and keep doing those good things that will help me out of the pit. Okay, other hands, yes?
Yeah, I was thinking Philippians 4:6-7, which says, don't be anxious about anything, but by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be known, and the peace of God that passes all understanding will guide your heart and your mind in Christ.
Great. Great, absolutely. That peace of God guards us, helps us. And that's why we so often need to have that peace of God, because it has a positive, helpful function to guard us from these things. Don't let yourself withdraw from friends, good work, exercise, etc. Don't stop doing the things that you need to do to keep on growing. You may want to stop. Those things aren't as enjoyable, but those are the very things that I need to keep on doing. You're going to have to wait it out with patience. Your brain's recalibrating, right? It's not fun. It's like fasting. There's nothing fun about that. You just have to wait it out and give your brain time to enjoy those things again. Things to be aware of, right? Notice the ways you've withdrawn yourself, been more irritable, the things in your life that you've let go. know that you're going to feel down for a while. Your brain has literally made life less pleasurable, and so it's going to take a little bit of time. Now, thankfully, our brain does recalibrate from that. And lean into God's good blessings. Enjoy that basketball again. Enjoy good food that God blessed you with. Enjoy time with good people. Worship of God and all of those things. Okay, good. What are some ways that if we have turned down the no voice in our head, as we've shrunk that part of our brain, what are some things that will help us along those lines? Is that a hand?
I was thinking of 2 Chronicles chapter 18, talking about Ahab and where he only wanted to listen to only these specific people, and sometimes we need to listen to rebuke, we need to listen to correction.
That's really good. That's really good. Ahab just wanted to hear what he wanted to hear. And some naysayer comes along and is like, oh, throw him in jail, right? And so we don't want to do that. We want to be willing to listen. Okay, yeah, very good. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to put barriers between yourself and the thing, because even if your brain isn't saying no, these barriers are going to stop you. I have software on my computer that blocks certain websites.
Yeah.
And if I try to take them off, you know, my dad gets a notification about it. And so, I mean, there was one time, you know, I was feeling really tempted, and I was like, well, I really don't want to have that conversation.
Absolutely. Yes. So if we've turned down the no voice, maybe we need someone else's no voice. We may need some help outside of ourselves. We talked about that last night, right? We're going to need that kind of help. Yes?
Two things. I was thinking about Jude 23 and the idea of like, being snatched, like someone snatched
That's
from
right.
the fire.
Okay? Yeah.
That is somebody seeing the danger you are in, and they are the one doing it for you.
Yes.
Like, sometimes you just like don't even realize you're burning. Right?
Yep. Great.
But then also the idea in 1 Thessalonians 5, where there's like several things like admonishing the idle and encouraging the faint-hearted and
yeah.
all that.
And we're going to talk about that one in the lesson. Yep.
Well, can I say?
Yes.
Like
Go, yes.
being patient
mm-hmm.
and realizing like just a one-time, whoop, snatch you out of that. Like that's not what's going to help them grow their own no voice. Like sometimes it is a repetitive, patient, I'm going to keep on.
Great.
Until you can do it yourself.
Yes. That's really good. That's really good. Yeah, good thoughts there. The drug addiction literally shrinks your brain to turn down the voices that would keep you away from the drugs. So you're going to have to work hard to turn up those voices. That's going to be part of it. Okay, so if I know that my time of temptation is school's over, school's let out, my buddies are there, and they're going to offer me something, right? Well, I need to be thinking long before that, during the day, getting myself ready for that. I need to realize, look, a strong wind blows and it topples me over. That I'm just very easy to fall into this. So I've got to be working ahead of time. The spirit may be willing, but the flesh is weak. So watch and pray that you don't enter into temptation. I bet, oh, there it is. Okay, Matthew 26:41. Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And so in that moment in the garden, Jesus is praying ahead of time before the temptation. Peter is not praying before the temptation, and Peter does not pass that test. So praying ahead of time, thinking about it, because when that moment comes, it's just going to be difficult. And so don't wait until, well, I'll just feel good enough when it comes. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Another thought along these lines. So therefore, because we've shrunk our brain, you need to accept help from people who can say no for you, right? Depend on people who can be strong, people who can be helpful while you're still in a place of weakness. So getting that help outside of ourselves, utilizing other people. So things to be aware of with this. Notice how small the voice of your conscience has become, right? 1 Timothy 4:2 talks about people whose conscience has been seared like with a hot iron. And so, like, wow, I'm like prone to fall at the slightest thing, right? Notice how small that has become. Notice when you're tempted to ignore that voice, and you can even learn to be very specific. Here's the lie I tell myself. It'll only be this once, or this'll be the last time, or you name it. What's that little lie you tell yourself? I've done so good. I deserve this. So what is that little voice of temptation? And what? Where's the no in all of that? Notice that you're not listening to that. Notice how easily you relapse, right? And be aware of that. Be honest with yourself about that. Okay, what about this? When that roller coaster is sunk to where now you're just kind of anxious without it, right? You think life is just hard and painful without it. And you keep turning to it because you feel like you just got to have this thing. And in fact, that's what your body's kind of making you feel that way. So what are some things we can be helpful for people in this stage? Yes, please.
Community.
A second.
Community.
Community, absolutely. Any thoughts with that?
Just being, I mean, kind of like you said, like being accountable, but also showing the example of restoration, what it means to be in a relationship where you're desiring the things of God and not the things of the flesh, being conditioned around those things and being surrounded by those things, the encouraging those things.
Great.
By
because those relationships are huge, right? So helpful to us. Yeah, those good people in our life. Yeah, Ethan.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, this is especially true with drugs and pornography, that when, you know, you're at the point where, you know, what you were doing doesn't work anymore, you seek out something further.
Yes.
And so I think, again, it's important to have barriers in place so that you can seek out those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Another area that this, I think, is showing up in kind of a rampant way is screen addictions. When it's like, if I'm not looking at my phone, I'm anxious, you know, I can't do anything. And that kind of anxiety, I think, is the result of continuing to go to our phones for dopamine, but it's not because it's that fun, it's just because I kind of need to be in my phone or else I'm a mess. Good, yes, please.
I mean, this kind of goes along with community, but I think that when you're sinking or you're just not the best version of yourself generally, it's very easy to just resort to judgment. And instead of judgment, I think it's more productive and helpful to be compassionate and remember all the loving, compassionate verses that are in the Bible that describe how God loves you, because at the end of the day, what sin does is it creates a separation between you and God that makes you believe that God doesn't love and care for you, but that's false. You really need to draw nearer to God.
Yes.
In those really dark places.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be one of Satan's tools. Oh, he sinned. Now I'm going to make him feel really far from God, and God doesn't love you. God doesn't care. And what Paul said, I think this is tomorrow when we get to this. Paul says in 2 Corinthians, hey, he sinned. He's repented, so love him again. Bring him back so that he can be encouraged and not feel isolated from the group. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Justin.
Just think that the act of sinking can actually be a gift from God, and that it's in the in all the badness we feel. You know, we talk about people being rock bottom, mm-hmm. and then turning back to God.
Yes.
In Hosea 2, I think God describes intentionally doing that with Israel. He says, I will lure her and bring her into wilderness to speak tenderly to her. And so he's going to remove her from the blessings of all of the vineyards and gardens and all the nice things, the luxuries, so that she can just be reacquainted with God. And so sometimes, you know, we do need to face the abuser, so to speak. We have to deal with the darkness, and God lets us suffer that. And that, I think sometimes we see people going through that, and we want to rescue from that. And there's a sense in which
yeah, good. And of course, we think of the another great example of that, the New Testament, of the prodigal son who hits rock bottom, and then that's what helps him to turn around. Yeah, last comment. Is that Amy?
Yeah. Sometimes when somebody's having a really hard time, it can be easy to feel like, no, I don't want to put anything else on you because I know you're having a hard time. But I think the passage is like Ephesians chapter 4, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor. And then, you know, Elijah, after God gave him what he needed, then God said, okay, Elijah, I have a job for you. Here is something I need you to do. And both, if I'm
Great. Great. Yeah, absolutely. And that helps so much. Good. So your brain's adjusted to where it needs the drug, not just to feel good, but just to feel normal and not terrible. So, again, realizing you're going to feel terrible while your brain is readjusting. And is realizing you're going to be patient through that, right? Get encouragement through that, the idea of community. Look beyond the current misery, you know? It's like, look, you won't always be addicted to your phone. Let's be done with the phone and get through this. And, you know, a few weeks from now, things really will be better, right? Well, look beyond the current misery and be patient while it really is hard to overcome those things. So be aware. Know it's going to be hard. You're retraining your brain to re-engage appropriately with normal life again. Notice just how enslaved you are. Notice how enslaved you feel. And it's not even that the drug makes you feel so great, that it's just this wonderful thing. No, it's just so hard to put up a fight. And we just don't even put up much of a fight so much of the time. Okay, I hope that was a useful exercise. At the end, a few slides from now, that I will give kind of a homework for tonight and tomorrow. But here's the thing, is we just have less time, right? Because tonight we're getting back, and then tomorrow morning services. So it's like, if you have time, when we come to the homework, great. It's just kind of thinking about Psalm 131. But you may not have time for that because late night in the morning. We'll try to talk about Psalm 131 at the Dobbs house after lunch. We won't do that in the sermon or the class hour. So we'll get to that in a minute. But I really appreciate you guys doing that homework for tonight. So in the time that we have left, let's talk about anxiety. That's super common. People struggling with different fears, one of the reasons I bring it up is just because that's the area that, you know, where I fell into the pit, and then I've been able to have those experiences that allow me to talk to guys and able to, on a regular basis, be helping people with different anxiety struggles. So, because that's my field that I'm the most comfortable with, I have the most opinions about, let's talk about that for a little bit here. Anxiety is a disorder of anticipation. It's all about what you are afraid might happen, right? If it's reality, it's not fear or anxiety about something that's going to happen. It's happening, right? So this anxiety is you're afraid of what might happen in the future. So it's very connected to fear, of course, and it's often a need to do something to keep away the thing you're afraid of. So I'm afraid of that thought, push that thought away. I'm afraid of this thing that might happen, so I need to step in so that thing doesn't happen. So, you know, there's this thing I'm afraid of, and I need to be worrying about it instead of maybe doing something more productive. I need to be worried about it to keep this bad thing from happening. The anxious brain wants three things. And thankfully, they all start with the letter C, so it helps us to remember that. The anxious brain wants certainty. I want this to, you know, be for sure. I don't want there to be any uncertainty about this, and I, you know, feel so uncertain. How can you help make this be certain? Second, it wants comfort because you feel miserable. One of the interesting differences between anxiety and depression is you can be depressed and not realize it. You can be depressed and not even want to get out of it. You're like, I'm fine with this. You know, life's awful. I don't like anybody. And I'm just fine being here in this, you know, terrible pit. I'm just going to live this way. That's very different than the anxious mind. The anxious mind wants to get out of it. What do I need to do right now to feel better, to fix all of this? And so that really is a different experience. So because that's miserable and you want to be out of it, then you're seeking comfort. But ultimately, what the anxious brain is wanting is control. And when you really boil it down to what's going on, that the wanting this, I want it to be for sure, and I want to feel better, and I want to be able to control the future. But can we control the future? Can we control much of anything? No. In fact, that's not how God has made the world. So really, one of the things we need to grow in to conquer anxiety is just trust. just trust in God. I'm not saying that's easy. And there may be all kinds of associated things with it, but one of the things that's going to have to grow is trust in God, because he's going to have this, bring the certainty. Right? I can't make this thing happen or not. And I'm going to have to give control to God. God's in control, not me. So that's why our faith in God is so helpful in conquering anxiety. This is just one of those areas where, you know, people around us in the world grow in anxiety disorders. They overcome social anxiety. They overcome OCD. But if it's all about control, wouldn't you hope that Christians would be extra good at conquering anxiety, because we have a real hope, someone we can really trust in? I'm not saying it's easy. It's actually awful. But Christians should be able to grow and do well in this, because we are the people of God, and we should be learning to trust in God all the more as we live our lives. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. I've proved him o'er and o'er. I've seen his work in my life. So that should help me then to grow as I need to grow. Thankfully, of all the mental health disorders out there, anxiety disorders are the easiest ones to treat. Life doesn't work this way, but if you had to pick, man, pick anxiety, right? Because it really is the easiest to treat, the easiest to be brought out of. And there's a lot of interesting connections between anxiety and depression. They often go together. And we just need to see that is sometimes because of our anxiety that, you know, we keep going, and I'm kind of running my life. I can't be still because my thoughts are too stressful for me. And then I'm starting to feel really down. Well, that could be because of, you know, I've been up so long on the anxiety up here, my body just can't handle that anymore. And so I'm starting to also feel depressed about that. What's also interesting is once people start making better decisions about their anxiety and they start dropping things better, they start leaving it to God better, well, then they get depressed because they crest that hill and what goes up must come down, and they're doing better with it, but they're feeling depressed actually because they're growing and maturing in that. So it's not like the depression's a bad sign, like you're handling it poorly. It could be because you're handling it well, but just like a Olympic high diver who goes up 100 feet, splashes, and doesn't stop there at the water, there's a rebound with that. And so they do often go together. A lot of people, or I should say some people, will find that their depression is really just from the anxiety. They don't think like a depressed person. It's just that things are so stressful in their head. Once they can clear up the anxiety, then they're not prone to depression necessarily by itself. And many find that depression is more with dealing with anxiety than it is really a separate thing to deal with. Okay, when we're in different moods, we make different decisions. And we see this all the time, but maybe we've just never thought about it. The mood I'm in is very impactful to the kind of decisions that I make. So you tell me, you're in a great mood, you know, you come home from work and, you know, the doors swing open, something really great happened. How do you feel about spending money with your family or friends, whatever, when everything's going great? You feel good about spending the money, you're down. Good, you're like, go out to eat, right? And we're gonna buy that thing that we've been waiting to buy. And so you feel really good, right? The money's flowing when you feel good. I'm not saying that's wise, but that's just what we feel. Let's celebrate, right? And so the financial caution goes out the window because I'm in a really good mood, right? When you're angry, you tend to be willing to take more risks. Man, you see this in the Bible. I have up here 1 Samuel 25. David, righteous man, so many good characteristics, but Nabal pushed one too many of his buttons, right? And David's like, he's got to go. I'm going to kill this guy. Insults him, won't give him food. David's in a low place already. And Nabal sends that message back to him, putting him down, insulting him. And David's like, grab your swords. We're going to kill Nabal in his house, right? Well, you know, caution is out the window. That's what we say, right? You get angry, caution goes out the window. I was in a halfway house for the formerly incarcerated in Harlem. I was there as a visitor, as a guest, not as a resident, but I was visiting this halfway house for the formerly incarcerated, and there's a guy there who had gone to prison because His wife was cheating on him, and he found out who it was, and drove up to his house and started shooting bullets at this guy's house. And he was like, that wasn't a good decision. Like, you're right, that was not a good decision. And that's why he went to jail for that. Well, that's what we do. We get angry and we just do stuff, right? When you're angry, you tend to be willing to take more risks. But the opposite is when I have fear, I'm scared, and I'm anxious, you tend to be much less willing to take risks. You're taking the much more careful route, or it feels like. Feels like a careful route. It may not actually be careful, but that's how you feel. So Jeremiah 42, remember that story? They want to go to Egypt. They don't want to stick around for Babylon to show up. And they say, wait, let's ask God. Jeremiah, what does God say? And they've been planning to go to Egypt. Wait some time. Jeremiah gets the message from the Lord. Jeremiah says, don't go to Egypt. And they say, we're going to Egypt. It's too scary. We can't stick around here. And so they go anyways, right? They don't listen to God. They don't listen to Jeremiah. And they just do what feels like the safe option. We got to get out of here. That's what the anxious mind does, is I don't want to take a risk. That feels too scary. Let's do what seems like the safe thing. Fear makes us very irrational. And it seems to me that if there's one emotion that makes us the most irrational, it is fear. I mean, jealousy, anger, sorrow, obviously all those things can make us irrational, but fear pretty instantly makes people make bad decisions. Politicians know this, right? I mean, you can get your people mad at the other side. You can, you know, turn on the waterworks. But if you really want people to get on your side, you make them afraid of the other people, right? Afraid of them. And then they'll flock to you, right? We want to do the safe thing. We have that fear. So politicians can use that to their advantage. So, if anxiety is impacting your life, you see that you are worrying. You see that you're not doing the things that you need to be doing. It's a problem, and you really need to address that problem. I mean, things like, I like differentiating rumination is the thinking about things in the past. Worry is things yet to come that haven't happened yet. You could say worry for past things, but I like making that distinction. And so, you know, those things are on your mind. You can't let them go. It really is something that we need to address and grow if we have that problem. Well, if you were with us last night, maybe you remember that we made this important point, important principle for us to grow, is we improve our thinking when we improve our behaviors. We change what we do. That's going to help us think better and think differently over time. God bless us with that, because when things are really rough and you're just not thinking well at all, we can do the right things, and that's going to help our thinking. It circles back and improves my thinking, makes me more rational, the better I make those good choices. One of the best ways to change how we think is to change what we do, especially when your thinker isn't doing so great. So by handling our fears differently, we literally start thinking more rationally about the thing that gives us fear. And you can try this. I would challenge you, if you're skeptical of this approach that I believe is full of wisdom, that by addressing the things that make you afraid, that you can change your thinking about it by stepping into that. Here's what I want you to do, is just take 10 minutes for 2 weeks. 10 minutes a day for 2 weeks. And just, maybe it's while you're lying there going to bed, I want you to step into a terrifying thought for you. You're claustrophobic. So I want you to imagine you're buried alive and you're running out of air. You're terrified of snakes, terrified of spiders, you name it. I can't pick it for you. You have to pick what your worst, you know, phobia thing is. I want you to step into that. It's safe, right? It can't harm you. There's no snakes around, there's spiders around. There probably are spiders around, but probably not any snakes around. And you step into that, and just for 10 minutes, set your timer, I'm going to just make myself very anxious. And you just do that 10 minutes a day for 2 weeks. I'll guarantee you, you will feel much less afraid and maybe even start to feel curious about that subject. Maybe I would like to learn more about snakes or whatever it is. By you choosing to engage that, you're going to change your thinking about that. So you should try that. Maybe in 2 weeks I'll get a lot of phone calls from you guys. Be like, hey, I did the thing. I'm a changed man, right? Now I'm going to be a reptile scientist now, right? So we do start to think differently when I act differently, okay? Anxiety wants to avoid. Anxiety wants to shrink back from those things. So to grow out of that, we need to confront the fear, right? And we need to learn to stand our ground, even if that's just in my mind and in my heart, standing my ground. It may not have to do with anything bodily or physical, but I'm choosing to confront the fear. I really like this terminology that we see in the New Testament, that we don't want to shrink back from our fears. That phrase shows up a couple times. Acts 20, verse 18, following, "You yourselves know how I lived among you." This is Paul talking to the elders from Ephesus. "How I did not shrink from declaring to you anything that was profitable," right? He would be tempted to not say everything that he should say. He'd be tempted to not teach them what he may be scared to teach them. "No, I didn't. I didn't shrink from declaring that to you." Hebrews 10:39, "We are not those who shrink back and are destroyed." We're not going to be those who shrink back, but those who stand our ground, stand strong, of those kind of ideas. From a practical sense, there's different ways of addressing your fears head on. You could use different terminology with this, but one of the easiest ways would be passive exposure. That would be the lying in bed thinking about snakes kind of thing. Where, oh, I'm sorry, that's not a good thing. Scratch that. Passive exposure is, I'm just going to let thoughts as they come, right? When thoughts come, I'm just going to let those thoughts come, feelings come. When I feel scared, I don't need to push those feelings down, I don't need to push those feelings away. I'm just going to let things come, and it's passive, but as my mind spins, I'm just going to let myself, if scary thoughts, terrifying thoughts come, they're welcome to, right? So that's an important skill, that passive exposure, for training for when you're in the pit, because then that helps you later on. So the passive, just, I'm going to learn to sit still here. I don't like sitting still here. I don't like sitting here with nothing to do. I'm going to sit in this chair, and when thoughts come, that's cool. When feelings come, that's cool. They can't hurt me. So that's a passive approach. But it's still effective and helpful because of the more aggressive methods later on. The most aggressive method would be something they call ERP, or where you're directly doing it, like you put it in your faith. It's the most aggressive method of addressing your fears, because you literally, this is like, okay, I'm scared of snakes. I'm going to go to the pet store every day for 30 minutes, and I'm going to keep my anxiety at a 7, whatever that takes. So maybe it's sitting there, maybe it's putting my hand in there, you name it. It's like I'm addressing that thing. What's amazing is how quickly our fears go down when I'm willing to address it that way. And middle ground between those two is a scaffolding approach, where you are really building up little by little, and then you're increasing engagement as the brain is also then calming down. The point is not that these are three really totally different things. They're not mutually exclusive. In fact, you might need to do all three of them, but just kind of different ways, either totally aggressive or passive or something in the middle. So just let me, there's a reason why I'm going into this, is let me give you an example of scaffolding that I think you'll see why this is a helpful example. Say that your college-age child with social anxiety, panic attacks, you name it, they stop going to church. Why? Well, they want to go to church, but it's become too overwhelming. They go to church, they have panic attacks, they get overwhelmed, and so they just stopped going for that. Now, they're willing to be helped. They're willing for you to help them. You think, how often does this happen? Well, I'm a fairly young guy. I know of two young ladies that I've heard in the past couple of years who stopped going to church because of the panic attacks they get from that. And so I think it's a very relevant kind of example. So here's how a scaffolding approach would be utilized to help someone in that. Step one is establish the baseline. That's where you're going to start. And it kind of doesn't matter where that baseline is, but you're going to start there and then build on that. Okay. So a person is overwhelmed with anxiety and panic attacks when they go in the church building. Now, what can they do? Can they sit in the parking lot? Okay, yeah, they can sit in the parking lot. So let's do that. We're going to go and we're going to sit in the parking lot, and we're going to do that. And then the next week, we're going to do a little bit more. And then we're going to do a little bit more. But that's getting ahead of myself. You're establishing the baseline. What is it? Can they go in the lobby? Can they go in the lobby for 5 minutes? Okay, we're going to do that. And so you establish what that baseline is going to be. It kind of doesn't matter what it is. They're at where they're at, right? You can't change that. Where they're at is where they're at. So we're going to start here with that baseline. And then, of course, the idea is that we're going to build that little by little, slowly do more. So 3 minutes more in the building, and then next week it's 5 minutes more, and then it, you name it. You're going to build that up and take that at that pace where they really can grow back to doing that. You go from the lobby to the back row, and now you're in the back row during church services, okay? And then you're going to do it by yourself. You get the idea. You can build that up that way. You really want to conquer that. Then it's the second to last row, and then it's the third to last row, and then eventually you're going to the front row, that kind of thing. But you are then training your brain, I can do this. And guess what? The more you face that and make yourself do it, you start to think more rationally, more calmly, more in control about the whole thing. Consistency is obviously the key. Don't go backwards, right? Build on that and keep growing in the right direction. You got to keep doing it. If you're only doing that kind of exposure to the scary thing once a week, it's not going to be enough. It needs to be more like a regular thing, as regular as you can make it. And then step three is, that's the basics, right? The basics is baseline and then add to it. Step three is then supplement that with helpful things. Reward, right? Hey, you've done great. Reward that. Praise. Rejoice together. Celebrate those victories as they're doing that hard work of doing, growing back to what they know they should be doing. Depending on the situation, of course, depending if it's a kid versus an adult, you could say, hey, you get a coupon to wear once a month. You don't have to do it today. No questions asked. To give them some freedom of a sense of control with that. You can decide. Obviously, endless flexibility with this kind of thing. But you're starting a baseline. You're going to keep moving on from there and be encouraging and supplementing as you go. As we're wrapping this up, have you ever heard the phrase, step into the fear and it disappears? Ever heard that? If it rhymes, it's true. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but if it rhymes, it's totally true. Of course, it doesn't work that way. Here's what I think about that phrase. It's true, kind of. The problem is it just takes a while, and it's awful, right? When people say, step into the fear, it disappears, I think they're picturing, like, you're scared of giving a speech, right? And so you don't want to go up there in front of everyone. And then by the end of the speech, you're loving it, and you've stepped into it, now it's great. Okay, that's a dream world of someone getting up in public speaking. The reality is, when we step into these things, we really do become more clear thinking, more rational, more calm. It does take time, and it's awful. And so what a lot of people have done is they have worked on a fear, but maybe they just weren't consistent, or they didn't see the growth. And then they're like, well, I must be handling it wrong because it hasn't gotten better. Well, sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. And they just need someone to say, nope, you can do this. This is going to be great. And I will help you. But this is the path you should take. And you can get through this. And so that helps it to be consistent, which helps it to really be effective. And so that's the idea. It is awful. I mean, the ERP therapy that I did was the hardest thing I've ever done. But the blessings and the results come from that. It just takes a lot of courage to directly address your fears. No use denying that. It is really hard. And so we take that courage, we step into that, we give it time, God helps us through, God gives the blessing, and we really can learn to think better. One of my favorite Bible passages on this is Hosea 12:6. We learn to wait on the Lord. As we step into these difficult things, we wait on God. Hosea 12:6, so you, by the help of your God, return, hold fast to love and justice, and wait continually for your God. Not every once in a while. Wait always. Wait for the Lord. Wait continually for your God. And that's what's going to help us through these challenges. Because it's so miserable to confront our fears, we need encouragement as we go through it. It's super rough. It's super difficult, right? If you're working with your kids for them to tackle their fears, and you're doing stuff like exposure with them, you're helping them to do those hard things, here's the two things they need. Your kids need compassion, and they need confidence from you. Compassion because it's super hard. And it may seem weird to you, it may seem hard, but for them it's awful. So give them that compassion, but also give them confidence. I know you can do it. You're doing great. you're being courageous and express that confidence. You can totally do this. You can overcome this. So give them that compassion. Give them that confidence that they can do this. Be very encouraging to them as they're tackling those things. When adults are tackling fears, they need the same kind of help, right? They need compassion and they need confidence that you can do this. Okay, so this was our example from yesterday. Daddy, I'm scared about going to Florida because I read in a book about an alligator that crawled through a screen door in Florida and almost ate the family, and Grandpa's house has a screen door. So if you were with us last night, we said tonight we would talk about what's a helpful response. Well, talked to Justin and Lindsay last night, and Justin had a great response. I was like, well, maybe we don't even need to talk about this. But let's talk about it for a second. Here's what we need to see is the content is not the issue. This is not really about alligators, right? There's not really an alligator problem. The content is not significant. So addressing the alligators isn't helpful. There's no point talking about the alligators. Stay out of the alligators. But it's not about alligators, right? It's about a fear that seems very real, but there's not a problem. So comfort, right? Sweetie, I can tell you're really scared. You know, here, come sit by me. Normalize the fact that you have to do hard things too. You know, I have to do scary things in my life too. You know, just this morning, I had to give a presentation at work and that was hard, but that went fine. And then, see, we're not going to the alligators. We're just gonna have to trust in God in this. God is good. We really can trust in him to take care of us. You don't have to argue about if alligators can or can't eat you up at Granddad's house. We're gonna put our faith in God in this and obviously be calm, loving, but confident that that's the right thing to do. So I think that's a much more helpful response. If you have more questions about that, obviously we have a Q&A tomorrow. What is that girl wanting? She wants to feel better. Like we said, she wants comfort and certainty. She wants to hear from you, no alligator is going to eat you, but that's not gonna help. She might think that's what's gonna help her feel better, but really, the next night it's gonna be robbers, the next night it's gonna be rabies. You know, I mean, you name it, that's just a revolving door that things aren't going to get better. So, the fact of the matter is, our faith in God helps us to drop it, right? We're gonna trust in God, and we're gonna move forward and do the things that we need to do, and that's gonna be what helps us and brings us through. We can relax, we can let go, we really can trust in God, and that's what helps us so much with our fears. So here's our homework for tomorrow. If you can join us for the Q&A, read Psalm 131. Psalm 131 is a great psalm, and what you're looking for in that, just notice the biopsychosocial things, the body that's involved, the thinking that's involved, the relationship that's involved, God, relationship with God especially that's involved, and I think that it'll just explode with, you'll be like, wow, all that's right there. At least that's what I see. Maybe you'll see the same thing there. And you just think about what's powerful or helpful to you about this psalm. Look at that. What stands out to you as being such a helpful thing from Psalm 131? I really appreciate your attention tonight. You guys have really been listening great, even with the heat. So I hope that these things are helpful and encouraging. May God bless us all as we're seeking to work on these things.
Amen.